Today is Monday, January 13th, and this is Worth the Binge, the show where Aubrey
and Jeff
discuss the shows that we think are worth binging. For this first episode, we are going to start off with a show that she and I both love, Severance. We are excited to get into Severance and cover the first season before we get ready for the second season about to premiere later this week. But before that, we wanted to take a moment to kind of introduce ourselves so that you, the listener at home, kind of knows a little bit about who we are. For a few of you out there, my voice may sound familiar. This is the second podcast in the Junction Point Network, a network that did not exist until this show came about. So the first one is actually being grandfathered in, Generally Trivial. Shout out to Jordan and Sean and Ryan. So Aubrey, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about you?
Okay, so I'm Aubrey, and this is my first podcast that I'm doing, and I didn't really start listening or doing podcasts until we started dating. So this is very new to me, but I love watching different shows and just binging them as much as I can.
That is for sure.
So I think this will be good for us because I enjoy watching TV and you enjoy podcasts, so it kind of brings us together.
Yeah, a little bit of each of us in it for sure.
But outside of this, I am a middle school math teacher, and I enjoy singing. I sing on our worship team at church, so just...
Very well. Sings very well.
Thank you. So, yeah, this is a new experience for me.
definitely a little bit new for me. I mean, I podcasted for a while, but definitely a different kind of show. And it has been a while. It was while we were planning our wedding, and this year we're going to hit 6 years of marital bliss. So it has been a minute since we recorded anything. What kind of media, what kind of shows are you into besides all? Maybe narrow that down just a little bit.
Oh, I enjoy a lot of sci-fi. Supernatural was a big one for me. I enjoyed all the superhero type TV shows, the old DC that used to be CW, and then all the new Marvel movies that have been on, or TV shows that have been on Disney Plus recently. So just anything like that, and probably girly chick flicks that have been turned into TV shows. So
yeah, a few of those too. Yeah, for me, I'm not near as much of a TV watcher as you, definitely way more into movies. I do super love two of the Apple TV shows, two of my favorites all time, Ted Lasso and the one we're about to do, Severance. I really like the way that Ben Stiller looks at things. I really loved The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which I still need to get you to watch. But I mean, this show caught me immediately. The sound, the set design, the visuals, just all of it incredible, along with the obvious acting there as well. So I'm excited to talk about it. This first episode here, we're going to talk about basically the first half of the first season. We're going to do a second one talking about the second half of the first season. And then once episodes drop for season two, we plan on doing one for each episode. And we're going to have a companion one out probably Sunday nights or Monday nights. We're still working on that exact timing due to work schedules. But shortly after that episode drops. And we also want to let you guys know that we still have the pod line. For anyone who did listen to Generally Trivial, If you want to dial 415-PODLINE, you can leave a voicemail that we can play on the show so that your voice can be heard, your thoughts or questions or theories about the show. We would love to hear them. We would love for everyone else to hear them. So thank you for anyone who is listening to us. And we're going to go ahead and go into episode one of season one.
So season one, episode one of Severance is called Good News About Hell. And the synopsis for it is Mark is promoted to lead a team of employees who've had their memories surgically divided between their work and personal lives.
About as straightforward as it gets for a vague topic. I mean, it caught me, I mean, right off the get-go. Like this, I don't know why the show's not more popular than it is, but just so much of it was so striking.
Yeah, especially with, like, you see this woman just laying on the table, and you're like, who is she? What are we doing? Why is she just... It looked like she was just dropped there on the table.
Yeah. Yeah, and not just laying there, but, like, in this outfit that's almost like a timeless, but maybe if it had a time, it would be a 50s or 60s kind of vibe, not just in the room, but in her her inner outfit. And I just immediately think about how panic just immediately sets into her. Like, her eyes... Once she's awake, it's just panic.
Yeah.
We were listening to the podcast about Severance by the creators of Severance, or at least the Adam Scott and Ben Stiller, and they were talking about how one of the early drafts of the show talked about them actually being dropped onto the table through essentially a sphincter in the ceiling. So I'm glad they did not go with that, but they still kind of gave us that dropped feeling, like you were saying. Yeah. Like, she just got plopped here. It is. Yeah. I mean, they could have set her in a chair or set her almost anywhere else, and it would have felt a little more normal than just on a table.
Yeah.
But something almost like immediately telling you, hey, something's not right. You don't, it's out of place. You're not normally just laying on a table.
I was thinking, like, maybe like a hospital bed, like, or something, but just on a office table.
Yeah. Super disorienting.
But then there's like this voice coming out of this monitor asking a question, and he just is like, who are you? Which she couldn't answer. We find out.
Yeah, it's kind of that old idea of, you know, losing your memory, but to a whole other level. Mm-hmm.
I did write down all the questions for the survey, but I don't know if you want to go into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so question one was, who are you? Which she couldn't answer. And so he says, if you don't know the answer, you can say unknown.
Unknown.
Yeah. Question two, in which U.S. state or territory were you born? Which the voice has to say unknown because she says, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able to answer that either.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was born.
No. Question three, name any U.S. state or territory. This one she does answer. She says Delaware.
Aware of Delaware.
Yeah. Number four, which I thought was the most confusing question, but I can talk about that later. It says, what is Mr. Egan's favorite breakfast? And then number five, what is or was the color of your mother's eyes? And she does not know the answer to those.
That last one's the killer.
Yeah.
Like, so personal, so small, because, you know, it's not talking about, like, what was your mother like, but I'm sure it's racing her mind, like, what is my mother like? Who is my mother? Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you can't answer that, I mean, that's rough. I mean, that's... setting the stage for a lot of anxiety in Helly.
Mm-hmm. After Helly answers all the questions and gets a perfect score on her survey, someone opens the door and you kind of see a face a dark shadow of a body, but no face.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool. Look, that is kind of my my favorite cinematic shot of this episode, about how it's like the unknown of one of our main characters, Mark S., that we learn to find out here shortly. But yeah, I loved how they kind of held at that camera on him for a second, but had the shadow so you couldn't see his face.
After that, we go to the parking lot of Lumen Industries, where we see Mark in his car. He's crying. We don't know why that is yet, but he gets out of his car after he stops crying and walks into the building. I love the zoom out on the camera as he's walking into this huge building. And you could just see all the rows of cars that he has to walk through as he goes up to the building.
Yeah, it's a sweet building. A little intimidating, actually. I'm curious as to where that is. That'd be cool to...
I think they said it on the Severance podcast, but I forgot to mark that down. I think they said New York, maybe?
That's probably right. Yeah, I'm sure it's not anywhere mundane.
So then he walks into the Lumen Industries, where we don't really see any workers except for the lady at the front desk, which I thought was really weird. And she gets on the phone and he says, "I'm Mark Scout." And she picks up the phone and dials someone and then asks and says, "Let me see if they're ready for you." Once she figures out that you're ready, she says they're ready for you, and he walks downstairs to the severed floor, where he meets the security guard. Did you catch his name?
Mm-mm. No, I did not.
I feel like he's like, "Good morning, so and so." I forget.
I hope. I mean, he sees the guy 5 days a week. You would think he'd know his name. But I do not know his name, so.
Well, we go to Mark's locker, where he gets his severed employee key card that just has a water drop on it, and it's blue. He switches that out with his employee badge. He switches his watches and...
His shoes. Yep. I thought about that with the shoes. Like, I wondered at first why that was, and I'm betting it's because then they don't even want them to hint at to know what the weather's like outside.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Like, what time of year, what time, you know. I don't know, but I feel like I can't think of another reason why they'd make them switch the shoes out.
I almost feel, too, like you're not comparing who has the more expensive shoes. It's just everybody might have the same shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely could be something there. So when he goes down that elevator, we get the really sweet camera shot where they switch the lens there. I don't know the type of lens that they actually use, but they switch that perspective where it went a little wider out to get that different view of the face. And Mark is now on that severed floor. The severed floor is home to employees who have undergone the severance process. So they've got the chip in their brain that it severs their work self from their home self. So the person inside the building, their innie, as we come to find out, has no idea what happens outside of work, and their outie has no idea what happens while they're at work. So obviously there's some weird stuff going on, some weird stuff happening at this company, Lumen. Otherwise, why would they want their employees to not have any recollection of this? So yeah, he gets down to that floor, and he heads to his department, micro data refinement. Refinement. I think you just refined what I said.
Well, he gets in there, and we meet Milchick.
Mr. Milchick,
which asks him to come to the management office to talk to Mrs. Cobell.
Yeah. And they have a short conversation there. about the head of the department being gone and that Mark is now to take over that department. As part of that conversation, we get the title of the episode, the meaning behind that, because we get Miss Cobell talking about her mother, and we get the quote from her: "My mother was an atheist. She used to say that there was good news and bad news about hell. The good news is hell is just the product of a morbid human imagination. The bad news is what is whatever humans can imagine, they can usually create." I mean, that's a pretty rough quote. Mm-hmm.
So then she goes on to tell Mark that he is going to lead the orientation for a new innie that we're going to get.
Yeah, so that's leading us back to the very beginning of this episode, where he was doing the procedure there for Helly there on the table, for some reason being on the table, and so it kind of shows us they kind of did that in a reverse order. To kind of, I think, let us feel a little bit uncomfortable, too, as we were watching.
They say that Irving is going to supervise him as he is doing the introduction survey. And it was just very odd to me that he was supervising, yet he missed half the page, and Irving didn't say anything until after he had already messed up.
Yeah, I don't know if he was thinking he wanted him to mess up, mm-hmm. or if maybe he just wasn't as good as he thinks he is.
True, yeah, I don't know. It was just all very weird. But after we get through the survey, that's when we get to see the other side of the door, where he opens the door to see Helly there on the floor. Mark and Helly have an exchange where he's trying to go over the rest of this procedure book for their orientation. Helly is not having it at all. She throws the monitor at him. Is that what that's called? The speaker?
Yeah.
She throws the speaker
clocks at him hard.
That leaves a cut on his forehead.
He wasn't down very long. He took it like a champ.
He did. He's bleeding a little bit, but he still goes on with what he's supposed to do in reading this book to her. Then he tries to be more personable with her, which seems to be working, but then he automatically goes back to the book that she didn't want to hear from at all. And she gets up. She throws something out. Oh, she tries to take the book from him, which doesn't work. They play a little tug of war and then asks to leave.
Yeah, and then he tells her to ask one more time, because she's already asked twice.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to trigger this event where then she can attempt to leave. But upon leaving, it's going to then wake up her outer personality, her outie, which will then comes right back in through that stairwell, because mm-hmm. that's where she wants to be. But then the inner personality, her innie, does not want to be there and leaves the stairwell again. She tries this multiple times.
I love the one where she just runs out into the stairwell and falls on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we only ever get to see the perspective from inside the stairwell.
Yeah, and Mark can't even watch.
Yeah. He stands around the corner and she's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I'm not allowed to watch you leave."
I think I'd have a hard time not watching.
I know, me too. Especially with the sounds she's making as she's trying to leave.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd be there staring, but it'd be a hard time not peeking around that corner. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
So then she comes back in one last time, and she's like, "Why can't I leave?" And all he says is, "You did, and then you came back."
Which is pretty sad.
Mm-hmm. So then they walk together to Mrs. Cobell's office, and Mrs. Cobell apologizes to her that the rest of your orientation, Mark won't be there to ruin.
Yeah, because she's going to watch the video of herself, her outer self, telling her inner self that she wants to be here, that she decided to be here of her own free will. And that's a pretty trippy video, I imagine, to be watching.
Mm-hmm. I also love in the background that Mr. Milchick is putting a Band-Aid on Mark. Like, why couldn't he put his own Band-Aid on? Like, I don't understand, but...
Yeah. I don't even think I caught that, but that's awesome.
Did you notice that everything, Band-Aids, everything has their own, like, Lumen logo on it?
Everything in there. Yep, it's all Lumen.
Like, it doesn't say, obviously doesn't say Band-Aid, but there's just a Lumen logo. So then we meet the other refiners in the macro data refinement team, macro data refinement area.
A little bit later, we see Mark leaving for the day, and he almost kills Ellie while driving. She's holding some white flowers walking through the parking lot. She tells him he needs to watch where he's going.
I feel like, you know, normally you would watch where you're going, but their leave times are staggered. So I'm sure he has never seen anybody in the parking lot ever in his 2 years. Is it 2 years of him working there? So he normally probably just is like, I don't have to pay attention. There's nobody here. And that was the first day ever he's ever seen anybody in the parking lot with him. So.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's other departments, but yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
So as Mark is leaving, he finds a envelope on his windshield. He opens it up and sees a note from work saying, you were injured at work. You were... moving some supplies and some dropped and hit you on the head.
Yeah.
Which obviously isn't true about what happened at work that day. And he gets a VIP membership card to Pips.
Yeah. I guess the hot spot restaurant in town, maybe. I don't know. We don't see a bunch of other restaurants. So, but. The food looked decent when we see him there a little later in the series.
It did, but I don't know. I just don't understand how you getting hurt at work and getting a gift card is payment. I don't know.
I mean, it wasn't that. It ended up not being that bad. He didn't have to go to the hospital or anything. So
that's true. But he's just like, oh, I got hurt. Here's a gift card.
Yeah. So Mark makes it home. He's got his gift card. He escaped hitting Helly with his car. He needs to get his trash out and his recycling out. You know, every week he's got trash, he's got recycling, and he's got a next door neighbor that he cannot get this figured out, that she's using his bin or putting her bin in his place, I guess is what she's actually doing. It is at the end of this episode that we find out that his neighbor is someone that we have already seen this episode.
Who is a kooky old lady as his neighbor, but...
Yes.
Is definitely not as his boss, Mrs. Cobell.
Yeah, or Mrs. Selvig, as he calls her.
Yes. It's weird. She has two different names. Everybody else has... the same name. They just either go by Mark S., Mr. Scout, Mark Scout. but Mrs. Cobell at her, as we think, Audi is Mrs. Selvig. And she says something along the lines of the, you're going to read it?
Yeah, I have the quote here. She said, you know, my mother was a Catholic. She used to say it takes the saints 8 hours to bless a sleeping child. I hope you aren't rushing the saints. Which is an amazing little thing to show the duplicitousness of this character. And it makes you wonder which version is real? Is mm-hmm. is the atheist quote real? Is the Catholic quote real? Is either quote real? You know that you cannot trust this woman. In the first episode, you've seen evidence that she's talking out of both sides of her mouth. The question is, does she even know that she's talking out of both sides of her mouth? Mm-hmm. Like, is she also severed?
Yeah. Well, the way she acts, you kind of think she is.
Yeah. It definitely seems like a very different person. But we will definitely find out a lot more about Mrs. Selvig / Cobell / whoever she actually is in future episodes. Hey, Obs.
Yeah?
What is it that you saw in this episode that really stuck out to you? What's your, your observation?
I had two things. So when Mark is going up the elevator for the day, you see a clock behind the security guy, and it said 9:04. Uh-huh. And then when he goes up the elevator, he switches personalities. He's walking through these long, windy hallways that we see here, uh-huh. And gets to the MDR room. There's another clock, and it says 9:10. So it took him 6 minutes to go up the elevator and through the hallways to get to his department, which is a pretty long walk.
Yeah.
I don't think I would love that walk every day. And I didn't notice this until we watched the Severance pod, but he looks at his watch, apparently, as the uncomfortable walk. We get to see the whole thing going through the hallway. And then my second one, when Mark gets a new key card uh-huh. for now being promoted, the key cards look exactly the same.
They probably feel different or something, you know?
I don't know, but they look to us exactly the same.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But when he goes down the elevator, obviously Audi Mark has no idea what happened that day. He has no idea he got promoted. But as he's exchanging his elevator key card for his ID card that has his picture on it, he is getting ready to put it away, but then he does like a double take to look at it. Like, he knows that there's a difference, but he's not sure what that difference is. And I'm like, I don't understand how you see the difference in this key card that looks exactly like your other one.
He handles it every day, though.
I guess that's true, but it's just, I was just like, why are you, I don't know.
I mean, it's weird. It is weird. I definitely grant you that.
But those are my observations for, episode one.
Mark also attended a foodless dinner party, which I can't imagine ever going to. But when he is at this dinner party at his sister's house, his sister lives with the awesome Rickon, which is a pretty sweet name. But out in his sister's yard, he sees a businessman standing in the yard.
It's kind of that same cinematic shot that you said you liked from before, where he's in the shadows and you don't see his face. You just kind of see a silhouette.
Yeah, and then lights, like headlights come up, and then he's gone.
And Mark looks over at the headlights because he's kind of taken back by the headlights, and then he looks back and the guy's gone. And then on a different day, Mark decides to go to Pip's to use his VIP gift card that he got from getting hurt at work. As he's waiting on his food, a guy comes and sits with him at the booth, which we find out is Petey, who Mark worked with at Lumen before he got fired.
Yeah, his best friend from work. And apparently Petey only calls Mark a very good friend.
Mm-hmm. It's such a weird exchange because obviously the Audi Mark has no idea who this guy is. But this guy just comes and tells them they're best friends and tells them that he has no idea what goes on at work, but they've been trying to figure that out inside as well. And then gives him a red envelope with a card in it.
Yeah, to a niece.
To his niece, yes. Telling him to meet at a address on the back if he wants to know more.
Yes, which will bring us to episode 2.
Okay, episode 2 is called Half Loop. The team trains new hire heli on macro data refinement. Mark takes a day off to meet with a mysterious former colleague. So this episode I thought was super cool. It opens with Heli and Mr. Milchick, or at least Heli's Audi, which we have no clue about at the moment. And he is walking her through the upstairs of Lumen.
Yeah, we get to take a look at the process to become severed, which is pretty graphic and horrifying, actually. I would have no desire of getting drilled in my head, especially while awake.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
So I wanted to come back real quick to one of those survey questions I was talking about. It said, what is Mr. Egan's favorite breakfast? Because I, for some reason, thought later on that that had to do with who she was as a person.
Uh-huh.
But before they even go through the severance procedure, they see the big shrine of Mr. Egan, Keir Egan, and they talk about his breakfast habits. And she was like, oh, I knew that. And I think he said eggs and toast were his favorite breakfast.
It's not bad.
And so
it's not my favorite, but it's not bad.
Yeah. So it just makes sense that he would ask a question in the survey about something that happened before the procedure. So,
and like right before.
Yeah.
Yeah. The episode title is called Half Loop, which we find out a little bit later that that is actually the address of where the mysterious businessman wanted Mark to meet him. It's on the Half Loop Road.
I didn't remember that or see that. So
yeah.
It was a good catch. The severance procedure, we heard on the Severance podcast, a real doctor was playing the doctor that put the needle in her head, showed the real process of what brain kind of surgery would look like.
A real brain surgeon.
Yeah, a real brain surgeon, which is crazy because I feel like when we were watching it together, you were talking about, you were like, well, at least the X-ray or whatever video they were doing, you were like, that doesn't really look real.
Well, I mean, they said that the initial procedure was kind of close. I don't know if they were saying the imaging was close, but
yeah, like,
it just looks like way too big of a device to be put in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never had put anything put in my brain, so I don't know.
That's true.
Or maybe I have, and I've been severed and don't remember it.
I thought it was really eerie too when Mr. Milchick, she's getting ready to like close her eyes, and he just takes a picture and he's like, "I can't wait to meet the real you," or "Can't wait to meet you." That's what he says. "I can't wait to meet you."
Yeah. A lot of his lines just make him sound like a super creeper.
I know, yeah.
Super creep.
Especially with that mustache, that creep stash he's got.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, and then this is the first time we get to see the intro to the show.
Yeah, that's true. Looks a little bit like claymation, but is not claymation. It's a pretty... visually stunning. You kind of get creeped out by it. I remember when we were first watching it.
I know. It's like, just skip it. Just and then just like the music with it is so good. We were watching an interview where they talked about someone was playing the music and they were talking about how your right hand is doing something completely different from your left hand as you're playing it on the piano or something, which I thought was... very interesting when you think about the severed aspect of the show.
Yeah. Like, it's audibly disconcerting, but on a level that I wouldn't even have, you know, imagined that it was mentally played in a way that, yeah, like, it was your left hand different than your right hand.
After the intro, we see Mark coming in on this next Monday, go down the elevator, and he switches into his any form. He's the first one there, and he gets this MDR chief of the department sheet that he has morning duties that he has to do, which I told you while we were watching this. All the duties that he's doing is stuff of the, like, the cleanup the help would do.
Right. Yeah. Not something you'd think the manager is doing.
Yeah. Which is crazy. I hope his Audi form is getting a good paycheck for all this extra work he's doing.
Yeah. I guess we don't know. I mean, his house seems decent, but not, you know, not impressive. Mm-hmm. And I would assume he's getting some kind of discount. Since his housing's owned by Lumen as well.
Yeah, that I hope so too. So we come into the office, and once everybody is there, they start teaching. Is this the day they start teaching Helly about data?
Data refinement, yeah.
And telling her to look for the scary numbers, or the numbers that invoke a certain emotion.
Yeah, that brings me to my first question of this episode is, like, what are they doing with that code? What are they doing with those numbers?
Mm-hmm. I had a sort of prediction about it, but should I wait or?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
With the emotion aspect of it, I was kind of thinking maybe that they are sorting emotions in a way that they can control those emotions. So once it enacts an emotion, they can sort those in a certain box and use it for some sort of mind control. So when someone is in the severed state, they can take away those fear enacting emotions so that the person doesn't feel them. So it's some sort of, they can get people to do things that they normally wouldn't do because they can take away that fear aspect or emotion. But
yeah, I can see it. I could see it being just something that is nothing.
Yeah.
It's almost just like a placebo kind of deal where they're working with something that is supposed to evoke something, but is only doing so because it's supposed to evoke something. Mm-hmm. I noticed in this episode there was some artwork of a man beating people with also a goat in the artwork, which is, you know, in this very sterile feeling environment is kind of an interesting thing to have a goat there. A lot of the artwork in the episodes is very, does not really fit. It doesn't feel like it fits with everything there since it is more of a calm, very business-like, clean atmosphere. And then you have this artwork that's very illustrative and almost demonic at some points.
Yeah, the artwork was very eerie at times.
My favorite shot in this episode is the break room hallway. When they show that, just how tight that is, how foreboding, and it looks like there's just no escape. Like, the only path is to this door, mm-hmm. which is leading to this break room, which is a really kind of not too fun place. But I also thought it was interesting about the facts about the Irving's Audi. They went over these facts that you were kind of talking about.
Oh, and the mental health break. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you want me to name a few? Because I wrote some of them.
There. Sure.
Your Audi is generous. Should I sound like Miss Casey? Your Audi is fond of music. Your Audi is a friend of children, elderly, and the insane. Your Audi is strong. Your Audi attends dances. And I think she said something about being well-liked by the other attendees. Your Audi likes films and owns a device that will play them. Your Audi is splendid and swims gracefully and well. Your Audi just won a game and apparently was in the newspaper for it.
Yeah, a lot of the wordings are super weird. Swims gracefully and well. Like, mm-hmm. I guess gracefully does not mean well, but I would imagine if someone swims gracefully, they also swim well. Like, you're efficient at it, yeah. So you would swim well, but I don't know. That wording was weird, and then, like, you don't think of people saying, you're friends with the insane.
Yeah. Your Audi values water. Your Audi is good at lovemaking.
Yeah. Kind of weird for HR to talk to you about that at work.
Yeah. There was two others I didn't get, but the last one that was really stood out or will later stand out is, your Audi likes the sound of radar.
That's an interesting sound to enjoy. I wonder about these specific wordings. What they, you know, are they there for a specific reason? Mm-hmm. We'll learn a little bit later that word means a little bit of something to Irving. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think that a lot of the other ones do too. Like, are they trying to see if the any version of him recalls anything, yeah, from the Audi version of him? Kind of going back to what you were saying about the emotion control, are they really trying to see how effective that procedure is? Are they using these people as test subjects for future procedures? And seeing what they know, what they don't know, what is permeated through this procedure, and using that to affect procedures in the future.
Yeah. We also find out this episode about the reward system for all the things that they're refining.
Yeah. Shout out to Dylan.
Shout out to Dylan, who loves all the perks you get. So if you refine 10% of a file, you get an eraser, probably a Lumen eraser.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm back in, you know, these book fairs in elementary school.
Mm-hmm. If you refine 25% of a file, you get a finger trap, which those things used to scare me. The first time I used one, I was like, how do I get my finger out here?
If you pull hard enough, it'll come out. I know it's supposed to be like it gets tighter as you pull hard, but if you pull real hard, it's coming out.
Mm-hmm. If you refine 75% of a file, you get a music/dance experience, which we get to experience later on with Heliar.
Yeah.
And then if you refine 100% of a file, you get a caricature portrait. And then you also get, if you are refiner of the month, you get a waffle party.
That sounds pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. Heliar also asks, well, how do you get one of those desk paperweight things that Mark has, which is really cool? And Dylan says, oh, that's just something they gave him.
Which doesn't seem true, actually.
No.
Looking back at later episodes, it doesn't seem, it seems like there's a different way to get that. So, mm-hmm. Zach Cherry, the actor who portrays Dylan, he actually was a big fan of those caricatures.
Yeah.
He said that was actually a pretty sweet prize.
Yeah, it's just so bizarre, those prize choices, I guess, for adults that are working.
Most of them. I mean, I think the waffle party would motivate some people.
Maybe the dance music experience, because they've never experienced that, I guess.
Yeah, that wouldn't motivate me. It would probably do the opposite. Probably be trying to not win that prize.
Mm-hmm. They also have a welcome party for Heli and do a little name game. And something I thought was bizarre during this point, because Mark S. is talking about Petey and his emotions of Petey being gone. And he was like, I don't know if he's on a beach somewhere. I don't know if he died. And Milkcheck says, a life at Lumen is protected from such things, talking about death. And so I was very confused how that's possible.
Well, I think that the people inside never have to deal with it.
That's true, yeah.
There is no death for them. It's just someone stops showing up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, someone, I guess, could have a heart attack at work, but I don't know. It just was a weird line.
Okay, I feel like. You took it dark. Good job. I guess you went.
Oh. While Mark is gone, visiting Petey, Helly R refines her first group of numbers. I wrote those down. I was trying to figure out if there was some type of, meaning behind them, but I could not figure it out. It's 30, 90, 14, 65, 41. I could not come up with anything.
You're giving out my phone number?
Oh, sorry.
Cool. Well, this is the episode that Mark does head to that address at the 499 Half Loop Road and drives out to meet up with Petey that we find out there at this abandoned greenhouse. And he plays for Mark this tape. That was actually the audio of Mark. We find out audio of Mark in the break room. Hmm. Talking about how sorry he is. Which has got to be a super disturbing thing to hear. Mm-hmm. Like yourself not knowing this happened, but yourself going, I'm sorry. And I'm sorry that's all that I am. And sorry is all that I can be. And it's all that I am. Like,
mm-hmm. Do you have it pulled up where you could read the whole thing?
No.
Oh. Yeah, it's super weird. I have some things I want to talk about later when it comes to the break room, but it's, yeah.
Mark invites Petey to stay in his basement, which feels a little bit uneasy with his neighbor being right there. But we get a really cool shot, too, of Petey showering, and then it's also like him washing his hands, like you see the memories of him and Lumen and showering all together, mm-hmm. blending together, which it had to be super trippy.
Which they call reintegration sickness. Oh, wait, all the stuff that happens to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Which closes out episode 2. Can we talk about his fish tank?
Sure.
It was bugging me so bad. Every other time we see this fish tank, we see fish in it. And then there's one time where there's absolutely no fish at all. And I'm trying to figure out where these fish are. Or maybe they're holograms because Mark Scout is not... He's drunk half the time. He's not...
Yeah.
You know, at work. And so I'm sure his fish don't get fed. We never see him feed these fish. So I don't know if it's just a hologram and sometimes the fish are there and sometimes they're not. Or if
How many fish are there in general? Like when there are fish there?
I think in like episode 7, I just saw one, but it was only showing half of the fish tank. Another time, I think there was two. And the one time I am remembering in episode 2, there was no fish in the tank. And then it's when Mrs. Selvig is there because she's giving him the cookies and the fish is right behind her and I don't see any fish in that tank.
Mark's a bad liar, by the way. He did not like those cookies. They were not good cookies.
Well, it's interesting because he comes out getting ready to go to work but doesn't go to work and she's like, I don't know. He says something about the cookies and she's like, I'll have to make you some more. And he's like, okay.
I don't know. Just being nice. Yeah. He's not going to eat them, but sure. I'll take them.
Episode 3 is called In Perpetuity. Mark takes the team on a field trip, but Helly continues to rebel.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she does.
So we open this episode with kind of a continuation of the end of last episode where Petey is in the shower. He is seeing kind of both sides of Lumen, or thinking he is at Lumen. And we see Irving come into the bathroom. He walks out and says something about Mrs. Cobell. And then all of a sudden we see Mark on the outside of the bathroom door saying, Mrs. Cobell. But it's Mark in his any attire, even though...
Yeah, it's the Audi version of him.
It's the Audi version of him. And I kind of noticed, I thought it was weird that he said Mrs. Cobell is a question. And so that's why I was like, I think that's his Audi version saying Mrs. Cobell. Like, what are you... Who are you talking about?
Who is that?
But Petey stays at home while Mark goes into work, and we get to see the perpetuity wing at work.
Yeah, when they're going over there and they're seeing that house, you think that's a green screen behind it? I feel like there was a green screen there. Like the house was real and then the green screen.
Maybe. I think in the podcast, the Severance podcast, they talked about how that's an actual museum. I think they built the house inside the museum.
Okay. So maybe not.
I'm sure parts of it might have been green screen, but.
And another question I had, nothing special about this episode, but I was thinking, not everyone's on time to things. Mm-hmm. We were a little bit late this morning, actually, going to church. What happens if employees are late? Since they're staggered,
yeah.
What do they do?
I wonder if they, like, call in and say, hey, I'm going to be a little late. And then they say, well, then come at this time instead. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. Because then they can re-stagger, but at a different time, so it's not intervening.
Yeah, that pushes everybody. Yeah. Also, the Egan statues here in the Perpetuity Ring, mm-hmm. Perpetuity Wing, they are creepy.
It's like when we went to the Wax Museum.
Yeah.
Where was that? Myrtle Beach?
Yeah, very creepy.
I love how Dylan, as they're walking to the Perpetuity Wing, hands them a bingo card, everybody but Irving, and says, we're going to have some team bonding time.
It's pretty easy bingo, too, it looks mm-hmm. like. Like, you're going to hit, you're going to bingo.
Yeah. Egan Bingo, as they called.
Irving is a super rules lawyer when it mm-hmm. comes to here, especially. He doesn't want anyone to do anything they're not supposed to do, making sure no one's touching the Egan bed.
Yeah.
And he just honestly kind of annoying. He's like, thanks, Dad. Like, all right, man, we got it. Like, you want to play by the rules. The rest of us want to enjoy work just a little bit.
Did you see Beauty and the Beast?
The cartoon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This kind of going to the Perpetuity Wing and all of that kind of reminded me of when Cogsworth is giving Belle like a tour of the castle, and he's like, this is this and this is that, and she's not very interested in it, but he is so encaptured in everything about this tour. And that's how it kind of seemed here, where Irving was telling everything, like you said, like he's so about the rules, but he's also like telling all about the culture and everything about Keir, and nobody is paying him any attention at all.
he's reverent.
Yeah.
I think is the right word there. He's reverent of the situation.
But yeah, I wrote down, like, it kind of reminded me of that scene because they're exploring everything and He's just so into it, and they're not at all.
No.
With these wax statues that we have, which are really creepy, they talk and everything. We get to see something I noticed was Philip Pip Egan, which that's who Pip's restaurant is named after.
It'd be weird if it wasn't. Yeah. It would. Don't think in that town there's a whole bunch of guys named Pip.
Mm-hmm. In this episode, while everybody's at work, Mrs. Selvig / Mrs. Cobell uses her own key to get into Mark's house.
Yeah.
Which is super creepy.
Yeah.
She goes down in the basement because I don't know why her first thing would be to go down there, but she goes down there and is looking around, and Petey is hiding behind some boxes, and it's so cool. He's seeing Mrs. Selvig, who is dressed as Mrs. Cobell, walking back and forth, talking on the phone, and he has these clips of seeing her in the office instead of in the bathroom where she is. And they talked about it on the Severance podcast, how they brought half of that set into the basement, and they did different clips of her walking back and forth. And
that sounds like an awful lot of work by the set guys.
It does. And then without her noticing, which is super weird, because I felt like those stairs made a lot of noise when she came down the stairs, he leaves the house. Or goes up the stairs, and you don't hear his feet at all going up the stairs.
And I also thought she saw him in the reflection on the TV that was downstairs. Mm-hmm. Like, if she paused for a second, I'm sure the camera's letting us see Petey looking at her in that reflection, but mm-hmm. it looked like maybe she saw him. But, I mean, obviously she didn't, because she would have done something about it, but...
And they said that when he is... After he sees Mrs. Cobell leaving in her car, he's hiding behind a bush. He gets up. They brought those half of the set for the hallway to the neighborhood. So it was just one big transition of him getting up from that bush and walking. And it was like he was walking in the hallways of Lumen. So that wasn't like green screen or anything or a different shot. It was just one shot of him going outside and then the hallway. Like, walking in the hallway.
Wow.
Yeah. and then he starts walking over a bridge. We see him. And he's just out of his mind. And then we pick up with him at a convenience store.
Yeah, and then Mark drives up and sees Petey bleeding from his nose and collapses.
Yeah.
We think... to death. Mm-hmm. It seems like he has died. We find out that he did die. But Mark wasn't 100% sure at that moment. This is also an episode where Helly is really trying hard to get out. She's hiding messages. She's writing on her arms. Mark tells her that, hey, there's code detection in the elevators, which
I don't believe it.
Yeah, still not sure myself on that. But she even wrote like half the code on her, the let me out, on half on one arm, half on the other, but like top and bottom half. Mm-hmm. So they didn't spell it out until she put her arms together, which honestly, impressive.
Yeah. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty tough. But somehow she managed it. And then had to wash it off anyway. And then she tried to hide a note in a pin cap and then was going to swallow the pin cap. Mark stopped her, telling her that Melchek was going to have to retrieve that one way or the other. So.
And he did know the time that it happened.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. To determine how far down this pin cap had traveled. But she ended up spitting it into Mark's hand. So did not have to deal with that.
But as they're in the Kier's modeled home, she leaves and tries to get the note on the back of her bingo card out the window of the stairwell so she can get her head out and try to read it. And Mr. Mr. Grainer comes and takes her to the break room.
The dreaded break room, where we actually get to start to see how bad this break room actually is. Mm-hmm. But we're going to save some of that
for episode four.
Episode four,
The You Are. Irving makes an intriguing discovery at work. Helly aggressively pursues a meeting with her Audi, and Mark grapples with the loss of his wife.
Yeah, just normal everyday subjects, nothing heavy about any of that.
So one thing that really stuck out with me is that Helly goes to the break room last episode with Mr. Grainer and starts doing her stuff in there. They take a break from that and send her home. And then she comes back, which doesn't seem like any amount of time to Helly R. And she goes back to the break room.
Yeah, Hotel California. You can check out, but you'll never leave.
Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. When she comes out of the break room finally, Mark asks her how many times.
Oh, I know how many times. I wrote that down. I assume you did, too.
I did not write that down, actually.
1,072.
Wow. She read that thing 1,072. Maybe I did write that down. I wrote down, which was really weird, Helly in the room, she hears an angry, mumbling guy in the background, and she asks what that is, but Milkcheck doesn't answer her. But she tells Dylan about it, and Dylan says, "I always hear a crying baby."
Huh.
Which was interesting. And we never get to hear what Mark's experience is like in there, but I wonder if he hears anything regarding his wife. Like screaming, car sounds, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you keep hitting with heavy details, sure. It's dead wife makes it add some weight to the story for sure. The episode title for this one, The You Are, is the book that his brother-in-law wrote, Rickon. And I got the shot in here that really caught my eye was when Mark is looking at this book, and Dylan is on one side of him, and Irving is on the other, and it's almost like, you know, those old cartoons where you'd have the devil on one shoulder and then the angel on the other shoulder. And Dylan was trying to tell him, you know, to go against company policy, and Irving is like reminding him snootily of company policy, of what he should be doing.
Yeah, I think that's really an interesting concept with the devil and the angel and the angel, or the devil and the angel. It's interesting. This is the first kind of contraband that they have. And so I'm sure it's jarring and, you know, interesting. Kind of like, what should we do with this? Should we read it? Should we give up? Like,
yeah, this book that probably 13 people have read in the real world by this author that's, you know, a little out there.
Well, I think it was very stupid of Milchick to leave it on the chair in the first place. Like, I know there was an emergency happening, but as soon as he found out it wasn't something that he needed to worry about with Mark's Audi, I think he should have, I don't know, given it back to Miss Cobell or something.
Definitely should have.
Instead of him trying to read it and make fun of it like he was.
I think the big thing in this episode is the discovery of Petey's map that Petey had talked about leaving it for Mark on the inside on the back of that picture. Mm. And one of the ways that Mark really showed how he still hasn't broken yet, he's still that company man about him ripping, you know, that map up so that they didn't get a chance to look at it and explore that a little bit further.
It's crazy that he, Well, he rips it up once everybody else sees it, but at first he kept it.
Yeah.
He put it behind the new picture.
Yeah. But he just couldn't deal with
everybody else knowing he was doing the wrong thing.
This is also the episode where he goes to Petey's funeral and deals with someone that was a work colleague, but Audi does not know.
Or he shouldn't know.
He doesn't really know him. You know, he heard some, he talked to him a little, but he doesn't really know him.
That's true.
And he finds his neighbor there again, so
it's a Selvig.
Yeah, we know Cobell knows what's going on. She is going to get that chip out of the dead guy's head during the funeral. She's going to,
has a whole drill with her
that she pulls out of her purse. Specialized tool. Which, when that happened, gross. But also, why did she not take the same path that they took? She went from the side of the head, not the top of the head. And the chip, you would think, would be situated like this. Mm-hmm. And if she's going this way, she'd have to pull it out differently, too, even.
I don't know if it was just kind of... I was thinking maybe it had to do with some, being less noticeable, but they did it in the back of the head, you're right, so I don't know why she went in from the side. Maybe she just didn't want to have to lift his head up,
Well, plus she had her back exposed, if somebody walked in on her.
Mm-hmm. I think it would have been too much trying to lift the head up, get the drill under there, and, so doing it from the side would be kind of less noticeable, but also she wouldn't have had to do a bunch of extra stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but the job is harder, for sure. Yeah, so not too great.
Any Mark has to do a wellness check this episode. And he gets to go see Miss Casey. We didn't talk about, but Mrs. Selvig or Miss Cobell took that candle from Mark's gym's stuff.
In the basement, when she was down there.
And now it's in Miss Casey's office, which was interesting.
Yeah, because she's just sick. Because Miss Selvig, that's gross, man. I mean, it's just like she's messing with him. There's some kind of sick appreciation out of all this. And they don't care what happens to these employees.
Yeah. And it's so crazy just how the brain works. They were talking about subconsciousness in the Severance podcast, but how he molds a tree when she gives him clay and his wife died. Her car drove into a tree, so that was very... weird how any Mark is molding a tree out of this clay.
Yeah, and it just another thing of going how much, Petey talks about this reintegration. How much of that is already happening to some degree? Mm-hmm. Is it there's just a little bit of memory already there, or emotion already there, or does that happen more over time?
Mm-hmm. Especially with Irving and his paint dropping from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Black goo, as
we... Yeah, what's going on there, we don't know. Mm-hmm. We also don't really get the chance to see what's going on with Helly, how much of that's happening to her. She's just going through Helly, her own personal Helly. And she wants out. She wants out. We saw the little bit of her at the beginning, how she went in, but other than that, we haven't seen Audi her at all.
No.
But this episode ends with a part that was honestly really hard to watch.
Yeah.
She grabs an extension cord and gets into the elevator, stands on a trash can, and she attempts suicide. And that is literally how they end that episode, is of seeing her legs dangling there. And that was not an easy watch. Mm-hmm. That was rough. But, they kind of leave you hanging there going into that next episode of what all is happening. How is Helly? Is she going to be okay? And we are going to have to find that out in the next episode of ours.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for listening to Worth the Binge, our Severance series. If you'd like to call in or have your voice heard on the podcast, remember you can call in at 415-PODLINE. And I guess you can also text in as well your comments or your questions. That would be great.
All right. And we will see you in the next episode.
See ya.
Bye.